Okay, good evening everybody, and welcome to this evening's tele-seminar called The Path of Miracles. My name is Damien Sen and it's a great pleasure having you on the call this evening. In a few moments from now, I'll be introducing our very special guest, Yogi Ashwini, also fondly known as Yogi G. But before I do, please allow me to share how this call will work this evening, particularly if this is your first peopleyoushouldmeet.com call that you've tuned into. Now, we're going to be on the call for around about an hour, and over the course of the hour, I'll be asking Yogi G a whole series of questions on our topic. Some of the questions will be my own, but the vast majority of questions will have actually been submitted in through the site by you, our listeners. Now, I first came across the work of Yogi G through Sue Blake, who actually helped to bring this call together. And I just wanted to acknowledge her and also acknowledge Yogi G's team of people who've been supporting and making this a possibility. Now, Yogi G is the guiding light of the Dhyan Foundation in New Delhi in India, a charitable organisation set up by his followers in 2002. He's a living master, a modern-day yogi, teacher and philosopher with a worldwide following. Yogi G is an expert on yoga, tantra, Ayurveda, spiritual sciences and healing. And he is based in India and is also an international speaker and author. So without further ado, it gives me great pleasure to welcome to the interview Yogi G. How are you doing there, Yogi G?
Yeah, good evening.
Welcome.
Thank you.
Now, I thought I'd just begin the interview, Yogi G, by asking, what exactly is a miracle?
See, when you don't understand the law of nature, first of all, we are all bound by laws of nature, and whatever happens, happens because of a certain law of nature which comes into play. So when you don't understand the law of nature and something happens, which your mind also does not understand, you call that a miracle. So like a few years back, the rising of the sun was a miracle. People did not understand that. Gravity was a miracle. How come things are coming down? Now, there are no more miracles because you understand them. So simply translated, it's laws of nature which you don't understand. That's a miracle.
Excellent. And just in terms of your own story and development, Yogi G, I was just wondering how you actually came to the path of yoga.
Yeah, actually, I've been educated in the Western model of economics. Basically, my subject has been economics all my life. I've studied economics. And I got an interest in the philosophies of yoga, just a general interest. And then I realized that what actually yoga is, like my guru and my teacher, the way they taught me yoga, it's not being done anywhere in the world. Whatever experiences I've had with modern day teachers, it's more like a shop. They're like small shops selling. Nothing wrong in a shop selling, but yoga definitely, the way I have been taught, and the way it has been taught in this country for thousands and thousands of years. And when I say thousands and thousands of years, you know, I mean thousands and thousands of years, because as per the scientific model of carbon dating, NASA has put a lot of proofs on the website also about certain kinds of civilizations which have been prevalent till nearly 74,000 years back. So these things intrigued me a lot, because what we have learned in history was, you know, uncivilized till 200 years. But now new theories, as they're coming up, they say civilized till 74,000 years. And they're just seeming to be rhyming so beautifully with what the Vedic texts, what the yogic texts say. They rhyme so beautifully with it. So since the rhyming is so beautiful, obviously there was something in the subject which we either have not been told properly or not been shown properly, possibly due to the vested interests of certain people. So I wanted to explore further to know what actually is the culture, what is the world, what's the human being. So I started to dwell into the subject of yoga, met my guru, and then experienced yoga. That is how my journey began into yoga.
You bring up an excellent question there, Yogiji, about what is a human. Now, I know many people struggle with understanding the context of the human life and the human experience. And I was just wondering if you could share your insights into why we actually come to planet Earth to have this experience.
You see, there's nothing very complicated. When you talk about yoga, yoga is just being natural. It's being with nature. There's no rituals. There's no lifestyle. There's no diet. Yoga is about being with nature. You don't have to struggle with anything in yoga. Whatever is natural, whatever is nature, is yoga. So just be natural, be with nature, and you're going to be in yoga. We will not complicate the subject of yoga. It's a very, very simple subject, accessible by anyone and everyone. But if practiced in the right way through a guru, the problem starts when we don't have a guru. And we want to use our brains to understand. You can't understand. Because it's simply the laws of nature. Very simple laws of nature. But you have to have somebody to explain those laws to you. And that is what the guru does. When scientifically the guru explains those laws of nature to you, then yoga is revealed. That is what this whole dimension is all about.
Excellent. Now, for lots of people who would love to come under the guidance of a guru or a teacher, many people get lost in lots of people out there calling themselves teachers or gurus. And I was just wondering if you had any advice for someone who could actually, like, how would they actually find their true teacher or their true guru?
Well, see, first of all, when you say guru or teacher, a guru is not a teacher. A teacher is different, a master is different, a guru is different. You want to learn something, you go to a teacher. You want to understand something, you go to a master. You want to experience something, then you have to go to a guru. You see, unfortunately, we cannot tailor-make the subject for ourselves. I know internationally, all over the world, people are trying to teach the subject.
Right.
But still, that is what the way of the world is. If you look around, if actually yoga were being practiced in the way yoga is supposed to be, this would not be the state of the world. The very fact that this is the state of the world, it simply means that there is no guru. And you cannot, let me categorically tell you, wherever in the world you are, you cannot do yoga without guru. You can learn, you can physically master things, you can understand things, but you cannot do yoga without a guru. It is not possible and it cannot happen because the way it has been brought about, we, you and me sitting here can't change those laws and those theories. Enough people have done that. You and me sitting here can't change it because that is the way the ancient rishis have prescribed. And we use our brains to tailor-make things, we use our brains to alter things, change things. No, we cannot. Because it is a science which has been documented 5,000 years back. You can imagine, when the world was on threshold, they were basically steeped in complete barbarism, where there were complete uncivilizedness everywhere. At that time, the yogic gurus were talking about peace, shanti. They're giving you laws of nature. They were describing the movements of the planets around the Earth. If I may, you know, just simply quote a few Western thoughts, like Count Morris, the Nobel laureate. The Count Morris, the Nobel laureate, very clearly says that 3,500 years back, the cosmology, the Vedic cosmology, it matches minute by minute, what we are doing today, what we are calling the cosmos today. It matches minute by minute. So how? Those people have given, even they've explained the rays of the sun. They have spoken about the moon. They have told that the moon reflects the sunlight. And they've described that what kind of light from the sun, what are the frequencies of the waves of the sun. In Rig Veda, they have described that, which illuminate the moon. If those frequencies were not there, the moon would not be illuminated the way it is illuminated. Because the moon also radiates certain kind of energy. So that energy would not be if those kind of rays were not emitting from the sun. So they even described that in detail. They have given you the basic theory of the atom. They have given you the philosophy of infinity. That infinity minus infinity is infinity. Infinity plus infinity is also infinity. You take out infinity from infinity, there's infinity. Buddha Shloka says, Purnamada Purnamidam, Purnata Purnamutachate, Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnamevavashishate. So, these concepts, the concept of zero, given in the Rig Veda. So, these are the masters who have made the subject and program of yoga for us. Let us not, because of our own limitations, try to alter it. Because you and me can't do it. If you want to do yoga, you have to have a guru.
And how did you find your guru, Yogiji?
Yeah, you see, when you talk about a guru, it's a very interesting thing because we normally associate a guru with a body. A guru can even be a piece of stone. A guru can be a book. A guru can be a body. It is something which we relate to, because ultimately a guru translates this beautiful nature into us. Divine, it is said, is in every aspect of creation. Divine is everywhere. Yet we can't access the divine because our bodies are not competent enough to access the divine. Guru is somebody who brings the divinity to you as per your capacity, whatever the capacity of your understanding is, whatever the capacity of your gaining experiences is. A guru brings that to you as per your capacity. That is why a guru is essential. And my guru, like I said, similarly, there is not such thing as my guru or your guru. A guru we consider as a force. Just it flows through an individual. It's that one force flowing through an individual. So we don't consider an individual. It is a force which flows through the individual. And when your karmas are right, when I say right karmas, what do I mean to say? When you are doing things for creation, when you are doing things for other people besides yourself, like when you live morning to night only for yourself, and you earn only for yourself, you enjoy your life, you just hoard things for yourself, you just fulfill your five senses, when everything is being done for yourself, then what happens? You don't need a guru because you don't need to know yoga. You just want to satisfy the five senses, that is it. So when you increase your ability, when you increase your scope, you say, I want to do something for creation. Because a guru never does anything for himself or herself. A guru does for you. Guru never charges you anything for anything. Guru does it free for you. A guru is not bound by anything because you have come to the guru to get something. You don't give anything back to the guru in monetary or physical terms. So you increase your capacity to do good things. You should increase your capacity to help others. And as soon as you do that, the guru will come to you. The guru comes down to you. Actually, it happens. You're just sitting, you'll find your guru. Otherwise, even if the guru appears in front of you, if your capacity is not there, you will not recognize. Nothing will happen. So that is what. So when I found my guru, I increased my capacity. You do the same.
Excellent. Now, for students that come to you, Yogiji, what's the first step you recommend them take on this path to seeing the miraculous more clearly?
See, to experience anything in yoga, I first of all say, just start helping anybody, anyone. I don't recommend a specific organization, like I would not say, you know, you do something for Dhyan Foundation only. You just start helping somebody near you, somebody, your neighbor, your friend, any unknown person. Like go to a temple or go to a church. Just go anywhere and just give anything to the needy there. Just give anything to the needy there. So you, when you embark on this kind of a journey, that is the beginning. And when you are ready to do something for somebody else, the service, that is the point of time when you actually are given the Sanatan Kriya to begin. Then you begin the Sanatan Kriya. And that is the beginning of yoga, what I call the Sanatan Kriya. Then I give it to you.
Now, in your book, Yogi Ji, the 51 Miracles and the Haunting that's just been released or in the process of being released, you share stories of people who have accessed this divine force and tapped into the way of miracles. And I was just wondering if any stories in particular come to mind that you would love to share of people who have accessed this way of being.
Yeah, actually, this book, 51 Miracles and a Haunting, Sanatan Kriya, actually, 51 Miracles and a Haunting, It is a compilation of stories which people have given me. Those are experienced miracles. And it's not my writing, it is the writing of those people who are educated, well-read people. They've traveled the world. And they just have experienced something which is miraculous. Maybe they could not understand. And they give it because they wanted to share their experience with the world. They wanted to tell the world that there is something. Yoga is not just another shop. OVR or Dhan Foundation is not just another shop selling something. It's the journey.
Mm.
So the story was given. One specific story, if you would say, you know, something very interesting. I would say that this lady who had gone to the Werfen caves in Austria. You know the Werfen caves in Austria, no?
Okay.
Where they are stalactites and stalagmites.
Right.
And if you go under the ground and you take a trip through, and it's slippery because there's ice under your feet.
Right.
And if you slip there, you go, and maybe you just plummet down, and there's no hope, there's no such thing, nothing. You can't save yourself then.
Mm.
You just go. You slide down. And there are no breaking points in the middle also. And you can get seriously injured by those stalactites and stalagmites. They can pierce your body also.
Mm.
She was there with her family, friends, and a small young son. And she tripped. So when she tripped, she slipped down. And when she slipped down, she just hurtled down. And she left the hand of her son also. She just hurtled down. And then she writes. Now, this lady is a dedicated person. With a very stable mind. She has worked a lot of years with the British High Commission here in India. And her husband is a very senior journalist with the Times of India group here in India. And so coming from her, I thought I'd just pick up the story because people can relate to this. When she slips, she just sees me actually standing right in front of her and just stopping her mid-path. And the people who had traveled with her, people who had gone with her, were actually amazed because they saw her sliding and they saw her just on that ice, just stopping, just like that. And her friends, the family, everybody was testimony to that. She stopped, just like that. And what she says is that you were there and you just held my hand. So when she came here and when she spoke about this experience of hers with the media, the first question that came was, you know, possibly you could have held the rope. And you're sliding down, there's a rope which is running parallel to you, parallel to this passage where you're walking. So you could have possibly held that. So she said, yes, possibly. But what happened was, the rope there, when I was sliding down, was around approximately 4.5 feet from the ground. And my total height is 5 feet something. And even if I raise my hand when I'm sitting down, I can't reach the rope. It is not possible. And I never raised my hand. I never extended my hand up. I just extended it in the front. And as if I'm holding somebody's hand. And it was not possible to hold the rope. And the friends and the husband who were testimony to it, they said, yes, the rope was at least a foot away from the hand. She just held something in front, which was nothing. Like there was nothing when you were sliding down. So this is one story which actually startled all of us, including me.
Mm. That's an amazing story. Now, Yogi G, the title of the book, 51 Miracles and a Haunting, the haunting element, I think, will interest a lot of people. And I was just wondering if you could explain how, certainly there are, I guess, lots of light forces that are present in the universe, but also there are darker energies as well. And I was just wondering how they interplay with each other.
Yeah, actually, this story is about a house which is actually haunted. Now, you see, for the creation to run into function, we have the dark forces and the opposite of the dark forces, the light forces.
Mm.
Forces of light, what you call. The devil and God is basically, it's always, all the time, they always coexist. It's only the devil, it's never, it's only the gods.
Mm.
And even for a human being to subsist and to exist, both aspects are to be inside the person.
Mm.
You cannot be in the body if you are only the devil. Because if you are only the devil, then you'll have to leave the body and you'll have to go to the lower dimensions.
Mm.
Or if you become only the goodness, again you'll have to leave the body and go to the higher dimensions.
Mm.
So since the physical body which we have has been given to us for the sake of experiences, primarily experiences, we have to experience the various aspects of the physical world.
Mm.
Since we have the experience, and experience involves a combination of both the forces.
Mm.
Now, what happens, there are certain places on this earth which are entry points to the higher worlds. Like I would say, and one place I know is the Himalaya area, Himalaya ranges.
Mm.
And there are certain places which are entry points to the lower worlds.
Mm.
And you can go into the lokas, which are the habitats of the dark forces, or the forces of evil, the devil basically.
Mm.
So this story is about one such a specific spot which we have here in New Delhi. It's a house where there's a tunnel which goes down into the dark realms and into the haunts of the devil basically.
Mm.
So this family didn't know about this and they built a house there.
Mm.
So the story is about this family, how people died one after the other, and those who survived in this house, how they were encountering these dark forces every day and every night, how these dark forces used to appear in front of them, and how these dark forces used to try and harm them. And a lot of the members of the family even died, but they didn't get out. Ultimately, by the time we interfered, we could save some members of the family. In that building, there were some flourishing businesses running.
Mm.
The house is still there. Anybody who wants to come and see the house, it's still there. Now, all businesses more or less have shut there.
Mm.
And upper floors of the house, from where the entry point is, the last 10 years, it's been uninhabited completely. You just can't go there. You can't live there.
Mm.
And anybody who wants to try it out is most welcome. That house is in the center of Delhi. It's right here.
Mm.
And we can take you there.
Mm.
So that's what is the combination of light and the dark forces. That's what the whole creation is all about.
Mm.
What the human being is all about. Coexistence. Experience.
Mm. Excellent. That's a great answer. Now, another question that comes up for many people on this path is the whole notion of karma. And I was just wondering if you could actually explain what karma is and how it actually plays out through the human experience.
Karma. You see, when you are born, you choose your body and choose your body on the basis of what you desire.
Mm.
So an action, whether carried out or not, even if the action is in your mind, in your brain, it becomes a karma.
Mm.
It's just that when you manifest that action, it's karma played. When you don't, it's karma unmanifested.
Mm.
Now, every karma that you do gives you an experience. You understand that?
Mm.
Every karma that you do gives you an experience. It's an experience for you. The purpose of your birth is primarily experience, because you want to experience things. There's no other purpose to birth. Experience and then evolution, then going beyond.
Mm.
So, when you do good karma, that means when you desire positive, good experiences, then you go towards higher levels of existence.
Mm.
And when you do bad karma, when you do bad things, even think bad things, plan bad things for others, then you do karma for the lower causes.
Mm.
And that takes you to lower dimensions.
Mm.
But in yoga, we don't consider anything to be actually higher or lower. We say, you know, you find your own levels. I always say that.
Mm.
You want to be a bad, bad, bad guy, you be a bad, bad, bad guy. Because if you want to be a bad, bad, bad guy, I say, you become a good guy, you will not. Simple, no?
Mm.
Because your soul desires those bad, bad experiences.
Mm.
So you get those bad, bad experiences and simultaneously you go on doing yoga.
Mm.
Simultaneously you go on doing Sanatan Kriya. Simultaneously, you do Ashtanga Yoga. So, when you're doing all the forms of yoga together, and you're doing a bad, bad, bad experiences, getting them, your bad experiences,
mm.
you'll realize that one day, you do not want that bad experience. It's no more applicable to you.
Mm.
You change. Your karmas change. Your karmic pattern, your karmic cycle changes towards, now,
mm.
good experiences. And you evolve, mm-hmm. which ultimately is the purpose of Sanatan Kriya.
Mm. Fantastic. That's a great answer. Now, as I mentioned earlier on, Yogiji, we had questions that came into the website from people from all around the world, and I thought I might just ask some of those questions now.
Yeah.
And this question comes from Bernard in the United Kingdom, and Bernard asks, do miracles always happen involuntarily, i.e. miraculously, or can you inspire them to happen?
You see, like I told you already, that a miracle is a law of nature which you don't understand.
Hmm.
Miracles always happen for a purpose. A miracle never happens to impress anybody. It's like miracles happen to those people who have the capacity and the capability to change towards good.
Hmm.
You see, you might change or you might not change. That is a secondary question. But the primary thing is, when divinity sees inside you that there is the capacity to change.
Mm.
Yes, here is one soul which can change its quality. So, something is shown to you. You are made to experience something. So that now you know that there is something beyond. Something which you don't understand. So, you begin that journey beyond. Beyond, when I say, I mean away from the ambit of the five senses.
Mm.
When you begin a journey beyond, you know, there is something, and then you get into yoga. So the purpose is not to impress, not to create a sensation, but to tell you that there is something beyond, start searching for you till you have the time.
Mm. Mm. Excellent. Great. This is a question from Phil, who is in Sweden. And Phil asks, hi, Yogiji. What is the key to experiencing more magic in everyday life? Much love to you.
You see, if you want to experience more magic in everyday life,
mm.
you simply begin the practice of Sanatan Kriya. You just begin yoga and you will start to experience more magic in your everyday life.
Mm.
Or the other thing is, you start helping people around you. Like saints. Saints have always been known to create magic, whether of any religion.
Mm.
All saints of all religions have created magic.
Mm.
So you also become that. And because you have to be revealed the higher worlds.
Mm.
And when you are in a state of dhyan in Sanatan Kriya, revelations happen to you. You are revealed things.
Mm.
You reveal the higher worlds. So that is what it is all about. To create magic in your life, just do something for others and start on that practice.
Mm.
That is what all the major religions. You take the Vedic philosophy, take the Christian philosophy. It teaches to help others.
Mm.
It teaches to do good for others.
Mm.
That can be anybody. It doesn't define you have to do good only for this person, only for this community, only amongst your friends. No.
Mm.
It says, just do good and see what happens. That's the way to create magic.
Mm. Mm. Excellent answer. And I guess for lots of people in the West, they're so absorbed in their own existence that actually thinking about other people, it's almost like they're so challenged by thinking of their own experience that they don't feel that they even have time to think about others. What advice would you give for someone who is experiencing that kind of challenge?
You see, I understand, but if you look at the West, no, there they have the best system for social causes, and which is very clearly monitored, which we don't have in the East here.
Mm.
It is here we have to convince people that, you know, do something for our society, do something for our environment, do something for people around you. In the West, like if you burn leaves, you are immediately fined.
Mm.
Here in the East, every second person is collecting all the leaves from the garden and burning it like that.
Mm.
Not creating about the environment at all. Not worrying about the environment at all.
Right.
So, I think it's easier because the training which is given in the West is environment.
Mm.
So you will survive if your environment survives. You will survive if you contribute to society, the social funds which people have there.
Mm.
We don't have all that here. Mm. So it's more of a challenge, to tell you very honestly, because I travel all over the West also.
Mm.
And it's more of a challenge to teach people here in the East about society, about good karmas, about living together, about not harming the environment. It's much easier to do that in the West. It's much easier. It's not a challenge there at all.
Mm. Excellent. That's a very good distinction and be very valuable for people to hear that. Excellent. This question comes from Nitesh, who is in India. And Nitesh asks, what is Pitra Lok? And two, can any and every person become a yogi in one lifetime by doing regular sadhana?
You see, Pitralok, in yoga what we say, that there are certain dimensions which you go to once you leave your body.
Mm.
And once you exhaust your karmas in those dimensions, you come back into the body, another body.
Mm.
So Pitralok actually is a form of existence where your ancestors reside. Those ancestors which have not come back into birth again.
Mm.
They are there and they are existing there. Now, what is the form of existence? It would not be possible to explain like this because, again, the lokas have to be experienced. You see, the entire subject of yoga, it has to be experienced. And I think Sanatana Kriya or Ashtanga Yoga is one of the easiest ways of experiencing because my subject is experience.
Mm.
I don't believe much in preaching.
Mm.
So Pitralok, yes, it sounds nice where the ancestors reside. But then, you know, you can argue on that, but where are the ancestors? Where do I want to see it? Why do they reside there only? You can get millions of questions. So tell Nitesh that existences are there, definitely they are there.
Mm.
And it is something which yogis experience whenever they want to. So do yoga. Do yoga properly in the right way and you will experience the Pitralok, the loka of your ancestors.
Mm.
Number two, when you say, can anybody become a yogi? Yes. It is, I think, the easiest thing to do because being with nature is the easiest thing to do. And a yogi is all the time with nature.
Mm.
So be with nature. And you see, the concept of yoga has been so much warped that you stand on your head, twist and turn in funny postures, you know, eat this, drink this, become vegetarian. All that is not yoga.
Mm.
All that, this is just a fad which is in play at the moment. It will pass off. It will pass away.
Mm.
It's not yoga.
Mm.
So anybody can be a yogi in one lifetime. Not one lifetime. In 5 minutes, you can be a yogi. You start doing, take the first step, do something for others.
Take that first step.
You begin the Sanatan Kriya. And let's see whether you don't become a yogi. Definitely you would. There's no doubt about that. You see, you can't, if you're only in India, it's not that you become a yogi. Or if you're living only in the UK or US, it's not that you will not become a yogi. It's not like that at all. Yoga resides inside you, not outside you. And inside, it's universal consciousness. You can go anywhere and be with anybody. You understand, no?
That's great. Yeah, I think that the common yoga resides in everyone. It's beautiful. And also, I like the distinction about being with nature is the easiest thing to do. And it just sometimes the mind can make it appear as if it isn't easy, but I guess that question in itself leads on to a perfect question from Lana in the United Kingdom. And Lana asks, "The mind is a terribly strong thing. I've wanted for so long to live more from my heart, but at 42, still haven't managed to, and I think it is ruining my life in my capacity to earn money and also in love. How do you make the heart win over the brain?"
First of all, this conflict, this war, winning and losing, this has to be taken out of your life completely. Everything is in harmony. Everything is a part of each other. You can't force your heart over the brain or the brain over the heart. It has to be a compromise between the both, because they both are part of you. First of all, so let's not do this fighting, thinking what will win and I want to do this, I want to do that. You simply begin yoga. You are dissatisfied. Like, what the underlying point is, that you are dissatisfied. Now, whether you are dissatisfied from the heart or the brain, you are assuming it's your heart or the brain. You might be wrong also, because you do not understand what is the heart and you do not understand what is the brain. The very fact that you're distinguishing is enough proof you do not understand it. You simply begin the practice of yoga and it will be revealed to you, and I can tell you with 100% certainty, you begin the practice of yoga, it will be revealed to you that who you are, what you are. And what has to be done, what not has to be done. The revelations are going to come to you. So wait for that revelation to happen to you. Stop this infighting with yourself only, because you have lived so many years, so many generations that just begin fighting. First fighting others, now you want to fight with yourself. What's the point? Forget this fighting thing.
Great. That's an excellent answer. Now this question comes from Marianne. And Marianne is in the United Kingdom. And Marianne asks, "My question is how to bridge the spiritual world with the material world. How do you bring spirituality into our work, daily activities, and our relationships?"
You see, when you talk about the spiritual world and the material world, they are not divorced from each other. As a matter of fact, if you are in the material world, and you are satisfied with your senses, only then can you come into the spiritual world. Because still your senses are dissatisfied, till you are lacking something in the physical, till then you will not think of the science of the spirit. You will not think of God. Because first you have to fulfill your physical desires. It is very important to fulfill your physical desires. Till they are not fulfilled, you will just remain there only, no matter how much you meditate, how much you think that you become great. First, focusing on fulfilling your desires, because you are born for experiences. The basic purpose of your life is experience. Since you are born for experiences, first fulfill that. Once you have just fulfilled, then you embark on the spiritual journey. Before that, it's pointless. And then when you embark on the spiritual journey, you'll find that your experiences become more profound, more deep, even of the physical. They become more profound, they become more deep. It has to begin experienced. Words cannot describe it.
Excellent. And a great question, Marianne. This one is a question from Ellie, who is in the United Kingdom. And Ellie asks, why is there still so much war going on globally?
You see, if you look globally, when was there no war? Like, I come from a country which has been invaded by nearly every race possible, you know that, no? Every race possible has invaded this country and looted whatever possible from here. And not for 100 years. You see, we say Hitler killed 10 million Jews. But here in this country, 80 million people have been massacred.
Wow.
Within a period of how many years? You'll be surprised. 40 to 50 years.
Wow.
80 million people. And what do we blame Hitler for? Have been massacred. So many invasions, one after the other, one after the other, one after the other. So war has always been there. You look at Europe. Till 40 years back, 50 years back, wars were a constant feature. All the time, all the time, all the time. So wars are a part of nature. Till one assumes himself or herself to be belonging to a specific part of the world and saying, I am superior to you, I belong to this part of the world, you belong to that part of the world. Till then, wars will go on. That is why the need for spirituality arises. Because once you get into spirituality, then you suddenly realize that, you know, whether you're living in the US or in India or in Africa, you have that same consciousness. Because sitting here, like at Dhyan Foundation, we specifically do this thing so many times and people get amazed. Like sitting here, somebody in the US sends us his picture. And looking at the picture and looking at the consciousness patterns of that person, you can tell from here that what are the imbalances in the person's body. So that is something which is an amazing thing, because consciousness is universal. It's everywhere. Which part of the world you're living in is absolutely inconsequential. So till that knowledge is given to people that you are all one, you are not two, no superiority or inferiority between two people, till then what will go on? Will go on, and definitely they will go on.
Excellent answer and a great question. Now this question comes from Tanmay in India, and Tanmay asks, Yogi G, one of the yams of Ashtanga Yoga is celibacy. What do we understand of celibacy, and do we force ourselves to be celibate?
Like I said, celibacy is simply celibacy. I know flowery definitions have been given about celibacy, but unfortunately, you might not like it. But if you are into yoga, and if you have to celibate, celibacy is celibacy. But here, in yoga, nothing is forced. In yoga, if you don't want to be a celibate, you're not forced to be a celibate. You are just given or introduced to lower practices. And slowly, slowly, as you accomplish those lower practices, you one fine day realize that you are experiencing something much more ecstatic than an orgasm. Something much more profound, something much more deep. And then you want to know, what was that? So in search of that, you automatically forget sex. Because it is something which is very sweet, very delicious. And you want that now. It's something like the higher senses, the activation of the higher senses. These are five very basic senses which you're talking about. Celibacy or sex is a very, very basic sense. It's a sense of touch, actually. So when your higher senses are activated through yoga, automatically you leave your lower senses, automatically. But if you tell that to somebody, okay, come into yoga, you'll have to be a celibate, 99% people would run away. No. I can't be a celibate. And they're entitled. Why should they be forcing anything on themselves? The thing is, yoga is forced. Everything is very natural. It happens very automatically, very beautifully. It flows. So we'll not force yoga on anybody. As per the capacity of the individual, understand your capacity. Let your guru decide your capacity. On the basis of your capacity, you're given the practice and you gradually evolve. There's no hurry. Gradually evolve.
Excellent. Now, this is just one final question from Julia, who is in the United Kingdom. And Julia asks, how can one become more joyful and God-conscious in life?
You do joy is in giving, let me tell you very clearly. Love is in freeing. You free somebody from your clutches, you will know what is the meaning of love. Like they say, you know, if you love something, you set it free. It comes back to you, it's yours. If it doesn't, it never was. So, love is freedom. Joy is giving. Holding, possessing are emotions. Negative emotions. They're not to do with the concept of love. You see, what you must understand, our body has got receptors called chakras. And those chakras are very clearly visible to a student of yoga. Very clearly visible. Now, Surya Chakra controls the emotions, the negative emotions of the person. And Anahata Chakra controls the emotion of love. Now, there's a difference of only 1 inch between the two. Just 1 inch. So what happens? You normally confuse this possessiveness with love. While love is setting free. So if you want to experience love, just give a chocolate to a child. You'll experience love. You just give a flower to an elderly, you'll experience love. Love is in giving. Love is not in possessing.
Beautiful. Excellent. Well, Yogi G, you've shared some amazing insights, and I've certainly grown immensely over the last hour just asking questions and listening to your answers. And I know for people who will listen to this recording, they will have similar experiences as well. And I was just wondering, for the benefit of people who will be listening to this recording, like I understand that you are coming to the UK very shortly to actually share these teachings. And I was just wondering if you could, first of all, share with people how they can find out more about your work and the Diane Foundation, and also of your upcoming events as well in the United Kingdom.
Yeah, I'm actually coming there on the 4th of June.
Okay.
And this book which I have, now my latest book which I have written, this 51 Doesn't Happen Kriya, 51 Miracles and a Haunting, I'm primarily coming to promote this book. And like I said earlier, this entire I would say subject, which is Dhyan Foundation, is a complete non-profitable organization. Whatever I write, I've written 3 books for this organization. I donate it to the organization only. And all the funds are used as charity for social work, for works of the foundation. And nobody draws any money out of it. Nobody gets a salary out of it, excepting a couple of basic employees which we have here. Rest, the entire work of the Dhyan Foundation is voluntary. And anywhere in the world, whether it's in US or it's in UK or it's in Singapore, we have centers all over. In India, we have centers all over India. It's 100% a voluntary work where no commerce is put to it, because that is what the gurus earlier had said. So when I'm going to be in UK, I'm going to be giving a little lecture at Watkins. And plus, I think it's nearly finalized that I'll be talking at Oxford also. So I haven't got confirmation as yet. I think it's going to be confirmed in a day or two. And then I'm going to be meeting a lot of media in the UK. Because it's very important to educate the media about what the subject is all about. Anybody who goes from here goes with the prime concept of earning more money and more name and fame. That's the first thing. And in yoga, you go to give. You don't get to go to get something back. So my journey basically has always been, that's how I have progressed in yoga. It means whatever I've got, I just distribute it and whoever asks for it. Even knowledge, or even my books, or even my teachings, financial support, whatever I can give, I give it to the foundation. And my name doesn't exist in the foundation, in the Dhyan Foundation anywhere. I'm not even a member. Other people are trustees and they handle the functioning of the foundation. I am only the guiding light. I show them the path, I show them the way. Because my purpose is yoga, strictly. And yoga is freeing yourself from bondages. Yoga is not tying yourself in knots. So I am trying to free myself from the bondages, and in the process I'm having experiences, and I'm traveling to UK to share those experiences in the hope that people actually realize what is yoga and come back to from where they had originated. Like I would say, not devolve, like we have been devolving slowly, slowly over the generations, but to evolve again now and evolve into being not better human beings, I would say, but becoming human beings. What human beings are all about, peace, love, is what the basic trait of a human being is. So getting out those traits in a human being. So I'm going to try, I'm going to make an attempt, and I hope people like you are going to support me in this so that to make the general people understand that what is actually yoga and what this book, Sanatan Kriya, 51 Miracles and a Haunting, is all about. What is the purpose of these miracles, why they have been shown, why have they been done, and why have people given them out? That is the basic purpose of my coming here, to educate.
Excellent. I certainly hope this recording and this interview helps to spread the message of your teachings and the true essence of yoga. Because I know this energy and this awareness has a lot of good to share with the world.
I hope to do.
Now, Yogi G, for someone who's listening to this recording, I was just wondering if you had any last final words that you would love to share with people who are contemplating the path of miracles and the path of yoga.
Yeah, you see, what I want to tell and what I want you to understand also, yes, we are living in a scientific world, but this science is only 200 years old, the scientific world which we are living in. Now, this science dates the yogic science. First, it had dated it to 3,500 years. Now, it dates it to 74,000 years. And you can imagine something which has been invaded, a culture which has been invaded hundreds of times. And still after every invasion comes out more stronger. Is there any other culture in the world, whether the Mayan or the Romans or the Aztecs? Is there any culture, or the Greeks? Is there any culture which has stood even one invasion? None. So there is obviously something very special about this culture, something very special. Understand what that is, and then form your inferences. And I'm quite sure, once you understand what this culture is all about, you would know that there is no differentiation in a human being at that point of time. And you would know, if 70,000 years back somebody could be talking about peace, somebody could be talking about celibacy, somebody could be talking about not stealing, not hoarding. We haven't understood these concepts in the modern world till now. And imagine 74,000 years back, as per NASA's carbon dating, they've given us those dates. And I've got the authorities with me to prove that. So you can imagine how strong and powerful this is and how strong and powerful this entire knowledge is. Let's benefit from it, all of us. All I can say is that. Rather living in our egos, saying I belong to the West, or I'm maybe stronger, I'm more powerful, I'm better. Maybe you are, and maybe you are not. So do the practice, first understand what's happening, then it'll tell you. It's not a question of who's better. It's a question of who's closer to being a human. We are all human beings. So let's see. That is the basic point.
Excellent. I love that thought to close on. Who is closer to being a human? It's a beautiful thing to contemplate, and like an excellent way to really bring this interview to a close. And I just really wanted to take this opportunity, Yogi G, to thank you wholeheartedly for not only just sharing the last hour with us, but for your commitment and your guiding light in the world, and also for the Dayan Foundation as well. I think you're doing remarkable work in the world, and I hope this small gesture of doing an interview and sharing it with people through the world will spread and bring your light and your teachings to more and more people.
Yeah, thank you so much for your support.
My pleasure.
So it's a cause that you're supporting. You must understand, you're not supporting an organization, you're not supporting a business. You're supporting a cause, which is a human cause. So thank you for that.
Excellent. Thanks, Yogi Ji. Now, for people listening to this recording and all of our recordings are actually made available on the People You Should Meet website for free. They're here to be of service to humanity. So one thing we do encourage you all to do is to take these recordings and make them freely available through your own networks. It's by taking steps forward and actually sharing these teachers that we all get to grow and experience. So if you believe listening to this recording will benefit the lives of a friend, a loved one, a work colleague, please do take that first step forward and sharing this material freely. We also, on the website, we have some new functionality that actually links this into the social networks of Twitter and Facebook. So it's actually very easy for you to share this material just with a simple click of a button, and you can actually distribute it to your networks. Great. Thank you so much, Yogi Ji, for a wonderful call.
Thank you so much for your time, Damien.